Good morning, everybody. This is Arnie Hackett in Raleigh. This session is for the ComServer V1 R13 overview. And I have Mike Fox, who is the chief designer for R13, who will take us through the current plans.
Okay. Thank you, Arnie. So this is the V1 R13 preview, and I will start changing slides on the presentation now. Slide 2 is just the usual boilerplate that we don't need to go over. Slide 3 is the agenda. And we're going to give a brief introduction, and a lot of you have probably seen this introduction material before about where we get requirements from. And then we're going to go right into the content. And it's organized by release theme, and you can see the release themes listed here, which we'll talk about a little bit more. Now, the V1R13 is planned for GA in September 2011. The most important thing on this slide, as I move the pointer to it, is at the very bottom, is the disclaimer. Okay? All statements regarding IBM future direction or intent, including current product plans, are subject to change or withdrawal without notice and represent objectives only. In other words, this is not, you know, a commitment to do these things. This is what we're expecting to do and planning to do in 13, but it is not a commitment to do this. All right, the next slide is kind of an overview of what do we expect the world to need from ZOS in the next 2 years. Since this release comes out at the end of 2011, we need to look at what the world's going to need from ZOS in that time frame. Clearly, System Z will continue to evolve, and also Z skills will continue to be an issue. Right? We got people retiring, and we also got new people becoming responsible for Z. Security continues to be a hot topic. We've done some customer surveys, and from that, we believe over 50% of network traffic will be encrypted soon. Government criteria are evolving, not only the U.S. government, which is listed on the slide, but other governments and also other standards like payment card industry and things like that. There are a lot of security standards that are evolving that we have to stay on top of. There are also increasing demands for performance and scalability on Z, which we always want to address. And also, I know a lot of you have heard this before, but we'll say it again, there are predictions that IPv4 addresses will be in short supply. On this slide, there is a link to Poteroo.com, which has a tool that monitors the assigning of IPv4 addresses and predicts when IPv4 addresses will run out. When I wrote this presentation, I went to this website, and it predicted that they would run out in May of 2012. They probably won't really. The rate will probably slow down, but the main point is that we are getting close to a critical mass on these, and we are seeing a lot more acceptance of IPv6. Okay, the next slide, this is another one that a lot of you may have already seen before in various contexts. Where do we get our content from? How do we decide what to put into a release? We have four main quadrants of release content. All right, we get direct feedback from you, which is very important to us, through calls like this, through CAP programs, through conferences like SHARE, GUIDE, beta programs, and technical disclosure meetings. We also get content requests from our executives, from IBM Software Group, platform competitive items, price performance enhancements, subsystem demands, you know, demands of the business for us to interoperate. The two boxes on the top of this slide we have input into, right, because we either negotiate with our executives or we can discuss with our customers and prioritize our resources versus what we need. The bottom two slides, we don't control those priorities. Those are kind of given to us, and we have no choice. Standards bodies make a lot of demands, and we have to keep up with standards. And also, the hardware requires support. You know, since we are the networking product, when new networking technologies are added to the hardware, we need to write software to support it. So the main point of this is, you know, of the four quadrants here, there's the top two we have input into. The bottom two are kind of mandatory, and we always try to fit in based on our resources and based on what the priorities are and the most value for customers, what we do in a release. All right, the next slide, these are the release themes for V1R13 communication server, and they are aligned with the V1R13 ZOS release themes. They're not all of them, but they're the ones that we feel apply to us. So we're trying to keep the business scenario where you have a secure, resilient system that's easy to use, adaptable, and supports existing workloads. So from that, we come up with these seven basic themes: simplification, to address difficult-to-use systems and limited skills; economics and platform efficiency, which, for the performance of the platform; application, middleware, and workload enablement is a theme for network management partners and also for applications that customers write. Security is always important. Availability, because we understand the high cost of outages on Z. Enterprise Extender and SNA. We continue to invest in that to help you preserve your large investment in legacy SNA workloads. And last, dynamic infrastructure, which is maximizing efficient use of physical machine resources. All right, so those are our themes, and what I'm going to do next is, starting on the next slide, we're going to go over the tentative V1R13 content that falls under each release theme. So the first thing we're going to discuss is security. And I'm going to start with an overview of intrusion detection. I don't know how many people on this call use intrusion detection technology. Intrusion detection technology. Now, we're currently on slide 8, discussing intrusion detection. This is just a little bit of background information. Communication servers had intrusion detection technology for several releases, and we enhanced it every release. And intrusion detection is a technology to protect your system against attacks. And those attacks include things like scans, attacks against the stack, and flooding. And we can defend ourselves by discarding packets or limiting connections to my destination, for example. We also can report attacks through many methods, including logging, event messages to local consoles, packet trace, and notifications to Tivoli products, as you can see in the diagram on the right. All of these great features, the main point of this slide is that it's currently supported in IPv4 only. So on the next slide, in V1R13, our plan is to implement intrusion detection for IPv6. We want to provide intrusion detection for IPv6 that's equal to IPv4 as of today. So all of the attack types that make sense for both IPv4 and IPv6 will be supported in IPv6. Also, we are adding new attack types for IPv6 specific vulnerabilities. For example, the restricted IPv6 next header, restricted IPv6 hop options, and so on. We're still designing this, but it is our goal to provide the equivalent intrusion detection technology in IPv6 that we have in IPv4. We have another defense mechanism called the Defense Manager Daemon, which was added in V1R10, which dynamically inserts filters in response to external events. When we developed that in V1R10, it already supported IPv6, so that does not need upgrading to support IPv6. So besides the IPv6, we are also further enhancing intrusion detection by adding support for additional attack types. The attack types on this page are supported for both IPv6 and IPv4. The first new attack type we're adding is the TCP window attack. The TCP window attack is an attack where an attacker creates a whole bunch of TCP connections and sets the window size to zero and keeps them open indefinitely. This is a denial-of-service attack that steals resources from your system. So we've added an IDS attack to detect and repel that. Also, there's a data hiding attack. In a data hiding attack, an attacker puts data in reserve fields. Now, in IPv6, there's pad end options because IPv6 headers need to end on 8-byte boundaries. So IPv6 has pad options that could be up to 7 bytes long, and that could be a back channel for hiding data. And IPv4 headers also have reserve fields. So the data hiding attack detects people trying to sneak data through those reserve fields. We've also added an attack to monitor the TCP queue size. This attack will help you manage the amount of storage TCP can take up for queues that are used for holding sent and received data. Another example of a denial of service attack could be for somebody to send out of order packets and or send a sequence of packets with one missing so that they never come back in order. Those packets are held in common storage for reassembly, and those queues can get large. So in V1R11, we added code to provide more resiliency for that case, but thresholds were fixed. In V1R13, we're adding the ability to configure those thresholds using intrusion detection. So this helps avoid TCP causing storage constraint situations on the system when a lot of out-of-order or missing packets are being experienced. All right, the next slide. In V1R12, we introduced the IKE Internet Key Exchange, or IKE version 2, which is the second generation of that protocol. We introduced IKE version 2 because it's required to support IPv6 according to the security standards that we need to follow. IKE v2 also supports IPv4, so it is possible to go to IKE v2 without doing IPv6. And we would like our customers to move to IKE v2 because it has many advantages and it's the current technology. But for many IPv4 customers, network address translation is a requirement. When we shipped IKE v2 in V1R12, we did not include support for network address translation. So in V1R13, we are adding support for network address translation to IKE v2. This will enable IPv4 customers to move to IKE v2 and have full function. All right, the next slide, we're adding support for password phrase support. Password phrases are a DOS concept that the platform has supported for several years. In a password phrase, instead of having an 8-character password, you can use a password phrase that's up to 100 characters. RACF supports this, and it's supported in a zero security environment. However, we have applications, particularly FTP, that pass passwords to RACF or to security products that do integrity checks on the passwords and won't allow a password through that's longer than 8 characters or that contains special characters. So our servers that pass passwords to RACF need to allow these password phrases. So FTP and TN3270 are being upgraded in V1R13 to support 100-character password phrases. The main value for this is if you have an application that exploits these servers, you can now use password phrases. For example, if you have an application that calls FTP through an API, you will be able to use password phrases as well as passwords through that API. Okay, the next slide. On slide 13, advanced dynamic BIPA binding security. Just as background, dynamic BIPAs are virtual IP addresses that are created when applications bind to them, and they're destroyed when the applications give them up. They can also be created and destroyed with console commands and by application programming interface calls. Currently, there is global security, which means that you can permit a user ID to create and destroy dynamic BIPAs, but you can't get any granular than that. If an application is permitted to create and destroy dynamic BIPAs, it can do it to all of them. So VNR 13, we're adding more granularity by providing the ability to control which applications can create and destroy which specific dynamic BIPAs and dynamic BIPA ranges. This gives you more granularity and control, and it also helps prevent errors, because one error scenario that we're helping to avoid is when an application destroys a dynamic BIPA that belongs to somebody else. It may not be malicious, it might just be a programming error, but this will prevent that. It would also keep applications only messing with their own dynamic BIPAs. Okay, so those are our planned enhancements for the security theme. The next theme is simplification, which is very important to us to make the platform easier to use as people retire and new skills come in. And first, as a little bit of overview, we have the IBM Configuration Assistant for ZOS Communication Server, which is our graphical user interface. In VNR 11, the Configuration Assistant was fully integrated into the ZOS Management Facility, which is also called ZOSFMF. The ZOSFMF version is integrated into our product, ships with our product, and runs on Z. It is officially supported. We also have a Windows version that we provide on an as-is basis. That is not officially supported. It doesn't ship with the product, and support is best effort basis. So with ZOSMF, we are providing an officially supported version of the graphical user interface that runs on the platform. So with that said, we have some configuration assistance enhancements. Our first one is configuration assistance support for multiple releases. We went to ZOSFMF, ZOSMF, indicated they want to have one instance managing an entire sysplex, which means if you have a mixed release environment, in other words, you have different releases of communication server in the sysplex, the current version configuration assistant only supports the version that it shipped with. So you'd have to use the VNR 11 version to configure a VNR 11 stack. You'd have to use the VNR 12 version to configure a VNR 12 stack. That obviously is not going to be acceptable in the ZOSMF environment, because you only get one ZOSMF in your sysplex. So in VNR 13, we're adding multiple release support. So the VNR 13 version of the configuration assistant, the ZOSMF version, will support configuring both VNR 13 and VNR 12. The VNR 14 version will support VNR 12, VNR 13, and VNR 14. And then going forward, all the supported releases of the communication server will be supported by the latest version of the configuration assistant. This is a ZOSMF enhancement. We are not planning to provide this in the as-is window GUI, because if you're using the as-is Windows GUI, it's easy to have a separate instance for each stack because they're running on Windows machines. You don't have any installation issues on ZOS. All right, the next slide, we're also starting to broaden the view of the configuration system to more of a sysplex-wide view. You know, we want you to be able to configure the sysplex as one entity, and currently it doesn't work that way. Currently, security policy rules had to be individually configured for each host in the sysplex. Now, it's not that bad because you can copy and modify, but there's not one central place where you manage it once you have those instances. But in a sysplex, you often need a common security policy. An example of that is a dynamic BIPA. If you have a dynamic BIPA that can move all over the sysplex, then you need to configure the security rules for that dynamic BIPA on every system where it could live, which means configuring a rule on each stack in the current environment. So in VNR 13, we're going to add sysplex-wide policy configuration, which will allow for a rule to be configured once for a dynamic BIPA or for other sysplex concepts and push to every host where it could reside. So this supports what we call a single system image for configuring a sysplex. Now, this is a journey. It may not all be there in VNR 13, but we're starting down this road. All right, in the next slide, another enhancement we're adding to the configuration assistant in VNR 13 is the ability to import TCP/IP configuration information. So for VNR 13, the configuration assistant will be able to import profile information from running TCP/IP stacks. And it will use that information to help you develop policy configuration. For example, it can learn what home addresses are on a stack, and you can use those home addresses to develop policy rules. It will be able to suggest address groups or things like that. So for VNR 13, we're going to use this imported information to help you configure policy. Our long-term goal is to be able to configure all of Communications Server with the Configuration Assistant. So our long-term goal is to be able to configure all of Communications Server with the Configuration Assistant. So obviously, the ability to import the existing configuration is the first step. So even though in VNR 13 we're not providing Communications Server profile configuration, we're starting down that road, and we'll give you some value in 13 by importing information and using it to help you do policy configuration. Okay. Now, the GUI is not the only simplification or consumability item. You know, it's about the whole product, and we are considering additional simplification items that are not related to the graphical user interface. Some of these things have been requested for a long time, and we're trying to work them in. This will depend a lot on capacity and priorities, but the items we're looking at are listed on this slide. TCP/IP profile syntax checking. We enable you to check the syntax of a profile before running a vario bay on it. So you don't find out you had a syntax error for the first time when you try to add it to your running system. This is only syntax checking. This isn't context checking. For example, if you try to delete an interface that doesn't exist, the syntax checker wouldn't detect that. But if you had a syntax error that prevented the command from being executed, we would detect that. We're also looking at enhancing the configuration control for TCP/IP retransmission parameters. This is something that's been asked for a while. You know, we have most of these hard-coded, and people want control over them. And we're also looking at providing you additional UID 0 relief. We've been working for several releases to reduce the number of servers that require a user ID of 0, which is the default Unix way of being a super user. But a lot of customers have requested us to not require UID 0, and we're looking at some existing servers to eliminate that requirement, things like Ike Daemon, Network Security Services Daemon, and Policy Agent. We're looking at making those so you don't need UID 0 to run them. And we also would like feedback on other daemons that you would like to see that added to. Okay, the next theme is dynamic infrastructure. This may sound like a new thing, but it used to be called virtualization. But now we're calling it dynamic infrastructure. I don't have a lot of specific information here because the hardware support has not been announced yet. So at this point, all I can say is that as the hardware for System Z continues to evolve, Communication Server will continue to provide the software support required to implement new Z networking functions. And watch this space. When there are hardware announcements, you can be sure the Communication Server will be participating in providing the networking infrastructure required. All right, our next theme is economics and platform efficiency, which you might have previously known as performance. All right, now, in V1R12, we've added OSA multiple input queue support. OSA multiple input queue support allows separation of different types of traffic on a different input queue so it can be put on different processors. So it has two benefits. One, it benefits the traffic being separated because it gets removed from the mainstream and processed on its own, but it also benefits the rest of traffic because this input queue traffic has been removed from it. In V1R12, we had multiple input queue support for both data and Sysplex distributed traffic. In V1R13, we're looking at adding it to Enterprise Extender and encrypted IP security traffic. All right, now on slide 24, VNR Communication Server has been making a long journey towards 64-bit enablement. Over time, we've moved various services and various control blocks into 64-bit storage to relieve constraint, and we're starting to ramp it up a little bit. Our goal is to be a fully 64-bit enabled stack, but that will be a multiple release effort. We can't do it in one release and turn the switch. In VNR 13, we are going to migrate a lot of our internal services, which you may not see directly, to 64-bit storage. The use case that we expect you to see is to move C-trace into 64-bit storage, so to remove some of the constraints on the size of C-trace buffers. And many other things will also be removed in preparation for moving the entire stack to 64-bit, which we hope to do in an upcoming release. We won't have it completely done in 13, but it is a multiple release effort that we're starting in 13. All right, we also are always trying to improve our performance on slide 25. Every release, we strive to improve performance and throughput. We focus on our software path length every release. We have a performance group that is constantly running measurements, constantly coming to us and saying, can we reduce the path length here? Can we make this more efficient? And we will continue that. Our goal is to reduce our path length for data transfers and mainline processing by 5% in each release. We've been doing this for several releases, and a lot of the easy stuff has been done doing this. So in V1R 13, some of the improvements we're looking at are using more compiler optimization, modifying the layout of internal data structures for better caching performance, and separating, you know, IPv4 and IPv6 modules to eliminate if checks on IPv6. And we're also looking to improve our TN3270 performance for long data streams. Most TN3270 traffic comes in 90-byte chunks or smaller chunks, but there are some implementations that send larger amounts of data. Our current implementation is optimized for these smaller chunks, and we are going to enhance the optimization so that if you're sending TN3270, you won't have a performance penalty. All All right, the next theme is availability. In V1R12, we added support to our resolver to detect unresponsive name servers. Now, an unresponsive name server is a big availability problem, as you probably know and your users know. In this diagram here, we have the resolver. The resolver is what calls when you want to find a host name. For example, you're looking for host.raleigh@ibm.com. Resolver is the component that gets called, and the resolver is the component that queries name servers. If the resolver sends the query to one name server and that name server is down, it has to time out, and that takes time. When that name server doesn't respond, then the resolver tries the next name server, which also has to time out, and that takes time. And finally, he tries the third name server, and then that one worked. So it worked, but the user who's doing the network call waited a long time. And in his view, it wasn't available. It didn't work. He may not even be patient enough to wait for it. So V1R12, we added logic to detect this situation and warn the operator so the operator could take action. In V1R13, we're going to take it a step further and be autonomic about it. We will have the ability to automatically skip unresponsive name servers once they are detected, which will improve the network availability view from the end user's point of view significantly. Okay, also in V1R, was it 11 or 12? In 11, I think it was, we added our CSSMTP server, which is a new mail server. The CSSMTP server does one thing very well. It sends batch email to the Internet from ZOS JES spool files. An example of that is paperless customer statements. Now, you have a million paperless customer statements to send out. The CSSMTP does that very well. Now, when you send mail, you send it to a target relay, and if the target relay fails to acknowledge the mail or has an error, then you retry. And we will retry in that case for a configured interval up to 5 days. The default is 5 minutes. Once we've passed the retry interval, we drop the message and return an undeliverable notice. But there are two things about the CSSMTP server that are worth noting. One is that a spool file cannot be deleted until all the messages in the spool have been delivered. So if you've got a million paperless customer statements and 20 of them are being retried, the whole spool file is held in spool. Also, when we do these retries, we do them out of CSSMTP memory. Now, our customers have been very positive about this because the performance is really good, as long as the retries don't drag on for too long. When the retries start dragging on longer, then it gets to be a problem with the memory. So in V1R13, we are going to provide file system storages of messages that are being retried for an extended interval. In other words, the existing retry interval that exists today will be untouched. We will retry out of spool and out of memory for that interval. But we've added an additional extended retry interval that if the first interval expires and the extended retry interval is still going on, we will write the messages to disk and retry them from there. So you get the best of both worlds. You get the retry from spool memory for quick performance, and then if it looks like it's going to be an extended retry or a long haul, it moves to the disk so that it doesn't affect performance of subsequent sends and hog your memory in spool. All right. We're also always working on improving our Sysplex networking. We have multiple enhancements for V1R13 for Sysplex. Some of these are internal that you may not see directly, but you'll see the performance results. The biggest one is we're reducing the use of locks in the coupling facility. What this means is if we have a lock held in the stack and we go to the coupling facility, it can be a while before the coupling facility comes back, and holding that lock is a performance problem. But we're going to reduce the number of locks so when we go to make calls to the coupling facility, we aren't holding locks. We're also going to shorten the interval for Viper route lookups and startup situations. You may recall that Viper route allows you to use something besides dynamic XCF for your Sysplex distributed traffic. Viper route is a parameter where you give it the IP address of a VIPA, and whatever the best route is to that VIPA, that's what we'll use for the Sysplex distributor traffic. Those routes are checked on a regular interval, one-minute interval, and if one goes down, then it takes a minute to realize that it came back. So we're going to shorten that interval in startup situations so that in recovery, which you know, when the stack is restarting, you can start using that a lot sooner, which should improve performance at startup. Also, we're going to more closely monitor common storage usage. Currently, we have Sysplex recovery, which is to leave the Sysplex if you're a host that's having a problem. And we currently have the ability to leave the Sysplex if we make CSM critical, which is defined as 90% of the limit. However, there's been some requests for a little bit better control, so we're adding the ability to recover if the CSM becomes merely constrained, which is 80%. So now you have two thresholds. You can tell the stack to leave to recover, which is to leave the Sysplex and let healthier stacks take over if you're a constrained CSM, or you can ask it to do it if it's up to critical. All right, now also, another Sysplex function we have is Sysplex-wide security associations. We've had this for quite a few releases. Sysplex-wide security associations basically allows IPsec-protected traffic to be distributed through the Sysplex, and the security associations and characteristics are moved with the target. So you can have a tunnel or a pipe between two hosts. If one of them is in a Sysplex, then if the destination is distributed, all the distribution targets have the same security characteristics. Currently, CISPLEX-wide Security Association is only supported for IPv4 and IPv1. So in VWR 13, we're going to add IPv4 support for IPv2, the CISPLEX-wide Security Association, which is another way to help you move to IPv2. Even if you're not using IPv6, you can benefit from IPv2. All right, the next theme is application, middleware, and workload enablement. And here we're going to be enhancing our FTP server. I already talked about our FTP use of password phrases. We're also going to add FTP support for large volume. We're going to add full FTP support for extended address volume -2, and also FTP support for large data sets, so that you can manage these huge data sets and write to them and move them around using FTP. We're also going to be adding new interfaces for network management partners. Tivoli and other network management partners always require new interfaces to implement new monitoring functions. Now, there's two types of interfaces we're talking about here. There's one that's kind of a tax, that if we add a new function, we need to add network management interfaces to allow the network managers to exploit or to monitor it. This is not what I'm talking about. That comes along with all the other items. These are new network management interfaces to allow network management partners to do new functions. And we're adding two of them in VWR 13. One is the ability to retrieve resolver configuration through the network management interface so that a tool can check and verify that the resolver configuration information is correct and hasn't been changed or tampered with. And we're also providing a command to display all of the TN3270 servers. Since we've moved TN3270 to its own address space now, you will be able to do dtelnet or dsomething, and it'll list all the address spaces that are TN3270 servers. And we're also going to provide that on the NMI. Network management vendors have asked for this to help monitor and control TN3270. By the way, on this slide and the previous one, you may not directly see these, but you'll see them in improved network management products. Now, in VWR 13, we're also adding program-controlled online tracing. The problem we're trying to solve here is that there are network management products today that use unsupported interfaces in a communication server to obtain the management data they need, also known as hooks. And those are unsupported, and they can cause instability. When we ship a new release, those usually break, and that causes everybody to have to scramble. So in VWR 13, we're going to provide supported function to address the requirements the network management vendors are using unsupported hooks for. Now, this is one that you may not see directly, but you'll see indirectly and improve stability and reliability of your network management system. One improvement that you will see is we're adding the ability also to run multiple traces with different options simultaneously. In other words, you could be running two different packet traces with different options simultaneously, and changes to one won't affect the other. So if you have a network management product that's running a packet trace, today, if you have a network management product that's running a packet trace, and somebody on the operator console changes the packet trace options, that network management product is affected. This will allow those traces to be independent so that you can make changes without affecting the network management product that are using the same trace. All right, our last theme is Enterprise Extender and SNA, which is always important to us to invest in SNA to protect your investment in legacy data and legacy applications, and we continue that in VWR 13. Now, we've concentrated on Enterprise Extender in VWR 13, and you're probably familiar with the Enterprise Extender. If you use SNA traffic, you're probably familiar with the Enterprise Extender DIAG command, test equals yes, which is sort of like traceroute for Enterprise Extender. It sends out probes to probe the path that the Enterprise Extender session will take. But just like traceroute has this problem, so does Enterprise Extender. If there's a firewall that blocks ICMP messages, because these probes use ICMP messages, then you're going to have a long delay before getting results, because you're going to send out your probe, the reply is going to come back, the firewall is going to drop it, it has to time out, then we send the probe again a little bit further, and so on and so on. The delay is, if you have a firewall and you have 10 router hops beyond the firewall, you're looking at a 90-second delay, because the delay is 9 seconds per hop past the firewall. These delays are happening because intermediate hops are being probed, and each one has a delay. So we're going to add a new option of VWR 13 to provide a quick test. Right? In this test, we'll send the probe straight to the endpoint, not to the intermediate ones, and get the response back. And we will not use ICMP for that. So what that means is you won't get intermediate hop information, you won't get a hop count, but you will get a quick test of the health of the connection to the endpoint without having to wait for the firewalls and all the drops of the intermediate hops. All right, we have other SNA Enterprise Extender items. We're working to improve the reliability of APP and dynamic routing algorithm. If you get corruption in the routing trees, we're now going to provide you a way to reset it. We're also going to enhance the reliability and provide more auditing options for Enterprise Extender traffic. And also, the IP packet trace formatter will have the ability to analyze HPR packets and HPR connections and give you information about that. All right, that's the end of the content that we're discussing. This last page, the more information page, you probably see this at the end of most presentations. I just want to point out that we are on social networking, communication servers on Twitter and on Facebook, so you can friend us and follow us for the latest updates. Everything else is general reference information. So that concludes the preview of the content.